A tradition has arisen in many progressive congregations of having a worship service near Charles Darwin's birthday, which is February 12th, with an annual focus on the ways that evolution impacts, influences, and informs the practice of religion in the 21st century. A related tradition around Darwin's birthday is an annual surge in religion versus science stories across all forms of media and on Facebook comments everywhere. For the most part, these religion versus science debates produce far more heat than light. And the most prominent example I've seen this year is the debate Tuesday at the Creation Museum in Kentucky between Ken Ham, a biblical literalist and young earth creationist, versus Bill Nye, the science guy. Did anyone watch this debate? All right, okay, a few of you. I'd be interested to hear if there's any part of the debate that really stood out or resonated with you as significant. For what it's worth, at this point, I have seen so many similar debates that I could not muster any interest in this one. But don't get me wrong, I see the challenge of integrating scientific evolution with traditional religion as a tremendously important intellectual challenge. But it was, to be clear, the great intellectual challenge of the late 19th and early 20th century. Here in the 21st century, we find ourselves living more than 150 years after the 1859 publication of Darwin's landmark book on the origin of the species by means of natural selection. In the words of one snarky blog post, quote, according to a 2012 Gallup poll, 46% of Americans believe in creationism. 46% of Americans believe in creationism. 32% of Americans believe in a God-guided evolution, and 15% of Americans are right. Now, I warned you this blog was sarcastic. And briefly, if you find yourself maybe in some form of that middle category, as far as I'm concerned, it all depends on what you mean by the word God. But I've preached previously on the subject of do we need a moratorium on the word God, and I'll post a link to that in the manuscript version of the sermon that we put on our website, but I need to set that aside for today. Suffice it to say for our focus this morning that the fact that 46% of Americans believe straight out in creationism is a compelling reason to continue having these religion versus science debates, although I do worry about the problem of what is called false equivalency. That by putting a creationist on the podium on one side of the stage across from a legitimate scientist, and I use that term intentionally, one has already elevated the creationist position to a much higher position than it deserves, making it appear as a serious intellectual alternative to the scientific theory of evolution, and it is not. At the same time, evolution has a public relations marketing problem. And those who believe in the value of both religion and science need to do a better job of publicly showing that a robust, life-giving, evolutionary religion is both desirable and possible. As one commentator on this most recent creation versus evolution debate said, Ken Ham, the president of the Creation Museum, which cost something like $27 million or were put into creating this museum in Kentucky, that Ken Ham and others in this camp of biblical literalism and young earth creationism are most, quote, insidiously wrong on one important aspect. Ham insists that evolution is anti-religious when it's actually just anti his religion. Evolution does undermine religious fundamentalism of all stripes, but that's a good thing. The Reverend Michael Dowd, a former pastor in the progressive Christian denomination, the United Church of Christ, which we jokingly chide our colleagues as actually the Unitarians Considering Christ, Dowd, since 2002, has been a self-proclaimed itinerant evolutionary evangelist, and he makes an important distinction between flat-earth religion and evolutionary religion. He defines flat earth religion as, quote, any perspective in which the metaphors and the theology still in use came into being when there was no reliable way for humans to comprehend the world around them by means of science-based public revelation. Religious traditions that are scripturally based and whose texts have not changed substantially since the time of Copernicus, Galileo, Newton, Darwin, Einstein, Hubble, Crick, Darwin, Hawking, those become necessarily flat earth faiths when interpreted literally. As a shorthand, I like to think of flat earth faiths as BC, not before Christ, but before Copernicus. Michael Dowd, incidentally, is the author of the provocatively titled book, Thank God for Evolution. And both he and his wife, Connie Barlow, who is a science writer and a Unitarian Universalist, will be here at UUCF on Thursday, October 23rd at 7 p.m. to present about their vision of evolutionary religion. I encourage you to save that date of October 23rd for that upcoming free event. Dowd and Barlow have for many years been popular presenters at UU congregations across the country, and they presented at the UUA General Assembly back in 2006. Before proceeding, I should perhaps also add that in drawing a distinction between flat earth faith and evolutionary religion, I'm by no means saying that we should abandon wholesale all those metaphors and theology that arose BC, before Copernicus. There are many compelling reasons and appropriate times to take those ancient theologies seriously, to take them metaphorically, to take them archetypally. But we often go awry when we take these flat earth metaphors and theologies literally. And for now, setting aside, though, the flat earth faith, I'd like to invite us to spend some time exploring a vision of what a robust, life-giving, evolutionary religion would look like that is both desirable and possible. As you've heard me say before, part of my UU elevator speech, how I describe UUism in 30 seconds or less, is that we draw wisdom from all the world's religions as well as from modern science. More explicitly, looking at the six sources of our Unitarian Universalist living tradition, we look both to, quote, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us to our ethical and our spiritual life, and to humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn against idolatries of the mind and spirit. And it is important to be honest that metaphors and theology from flat earth faith, from before Copernicus, from before the 16th century scientific revolution, can easily fall into those idolatries of the mind and spirit if they are not balanced with what we know to be true through human reason, through our own direct experience, and through the fullness of 21st century knowledge. And as Unitarian Universalists, one potential advantage we have for embracing both religion and science is that in embracing both the best of all the world's religions, we do not solely draw from the Abrahamic traditions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, which each has an aspect of their flat earth heritage that includes a perception of history as created by a supreme being just a few thousand years ago. Some people say about 6,000 years ago on a Tuesday. People get this specific. That young earth creationist paradigm has often been a stumbling block for these Abrahamic faiths in accepting the facts of the 13.7 billion-year-old universe story that science invites us to tell. In contrast, I think it's helpful for those of us, and this doesn't include everybody here this morning, but for those of us raised in a Judeo-Christian-influenced Western tradition, it's important to remember that traditional Hindu and Buddhist conceptions of time, such as the 1.28 trillion-year-long Mahakalpa cycle, dwarf even the scale of the 13.7 billion-year-old universe story. They're like, oh, that's easy. That's like way shorter than we're used to. That can make it much easier for Hindus and Buddhists to embrace the 13.7-year-old universe story. And you've heard me say before that the stories that we choose to tell, the ones we choose to repeat, the ones we choose to tell ourselves and to our children, that really matters. And to give evolutionary religion the public image it needs and deserves as a robust, meaningful, life-giving alternative to a flat earth faith, a vital step is learning to better claim and proclaim humanity's place on the current cusp of the 13.7-year-old, billion-year-old universe story. To do that in a way that is attractive and compelling for that 46% of Americans who believe in creationism and who may think that it's impossible to believe in both religion and science. Our opening hymn this morning put the riddle and a mystery of our existential situation this way. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? So let me begin by setting the stage of how we can begin to conceptually grasp, as much as is possible, the immensity of big history and deep time in order to cultivate an evolutionary consciousness worthy of the cosmic scope in which we find ourselves. In regard to this question of where did we come from? David Christian, a history professor at San Diego State University, in his book Maps of Time, An Introduction to Big History, puts it this way. He has the ingenious idea of collapsing the history of the universe by a factor of 1 billion, so that each billion years is reduced to 1 year. As a way of giving us humans human meaning to those vast expanses of time. Thus, the Big Bang, the beginning of the universe. Imagine that that began 13.5 years ago instead of billion years ago. The sun and the solar system 4.5 years ago. The first living organisms on Earth, single cell organisms, between 4 and 3.5 years ago. Multicellular organisms 7 months ago. Homo sapiens, 50 minutes ago. Agricultural communities, 5 minutes ago. And the great explosion of science and technology in the midst of which we live within the last second. Out of the 13.5 years in the life of the universe, historians have devoted themselves to the last 3 minutes, and mostly to the last minute or less. I'll read that last section just one more time. Homo sapiens about 50 minutes ago, agricultural communities 5 minutes ago, and the great explosion of science and technology in the midst of which we live with our iPads and our smartphones and all of that within the last second. One of the lessons some philosophers take from this big history perspective is that we human beings are radically decentered. We're radically decentered from the way we used to be able to think about ourselves as being at the center of the universe in those creation stories that are BC, before Copernicus. Moreover, even after Copernicus, even after his 1543 publication of On the Revolution of the Heavenly Spheres, there was so much more we didn't and still don't know. Michael Dowd writes, consider that 100 years ago, we had no idea that atoms were created in the bellies of stars, nor that our sun was a third or fourth generation star. We didn't know that stars were organized into galaxies. Even two decades ago, before the Hubble Space Telescope, we could not have conceived that galaxies number a quarter trillion. For many of you, your grandparents and great-grandparents did not know that the continents slowly slid under the Earth in vast tectonic plates. We didn't know that before the 70s, nor that genetic information is the stories within the architecture of a double helix molecule. We need evolutionary religion that is dynamic, changing, evolving, what some call an ancient future religion, religion that both reaches back to retrieve the best of what has come before from the world's religious traditions and is open to the best insights of modern science. Unitarian Universalism is not the only way of exploring evolutionary religion, but it is one robust way that does it boldly. As a lyric in our hymnal proclaims, we seek a freedom that reveres the past, but trusts the dawning future more. To that end, allow me to briefly say a bit more about how we can talk about evolutionary religion in a way that is both compelling and attractive to many, if not to all. First of all, we should say up front that there is an attraction in honesty, There's an attraction in honesty, in responding to the truth of 21st century science with openness and curiosity, not with a reactionary fear of change. And there is good news even in the radical decentering of humans from the center of the universe. Realizing we're not the height of creation, that we're not the center of the universe, and responding with an increased humility, that's a good and desirable view if there is to be a future for our species on this one planet. As I've heard it said before, Darwin invited us to see that we humans are not a little lower than the angels, we're just a little higher than the apes. Indeed, a study published in 2002 on the, quote, functional DNA in humans and chimpanzees shows that they are more similar to each other than either is to apes, that humans and chimpanzees are more similar to each other than either is to other apes, notes that, quote, we share over 99% of our genes with chimpanzees. And a movement is emerging in the scientific community to recognize the close evolutionary relationship between humans and chimpanzees by placing them in the same genus. And that genus would be Homo, as in Homo sapiens, the scientific name for our species. Same genus, different species, of course. The good news of this scientific revelation is how deeply a part of nature we are. Kate shared some about the importance of that interdependence in her story this morning. And this close kinship with other animals makes the importance of our seventh UU principle all the more clear. Respect for the interdependent web of all of existence of which we are a part. I would even go so far to say that Darwin's decentering of humanity and the related realization that we are only a little higher than the apes makes the claims about interdependence that we explored last week from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. all the more expansive and profound in the 21st century. That regarding not only our fellow human beings that Dr. King spoke about, but also all of nature on this one earth, we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. Tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. That's good news. That's evolutionary religion that we can believe in for the 21st century. In the same breath, though, we must name that the overall failure of our species to date, especially since the Industrial Revolution, to recognize and take responsibility for our interdependence with nature and to respect that we are tied in a single garment of destiny, that's resulted in human-caused climate change that poses a dire threat to our future. There's an increasing use of the term Anthropocene. You hear that word Anthropocene, like anthropology, similar to the study of humans. The Anthropocene era describes a new era in geologic time in which the dominant force shaping the Earth is not the Earth, it's humans. To help mitigate the coming climate crisis from the perspective of evolutionary religion, Michael Dowd likes to point out that everything in the universe really is not only interdependent, but made of the same substances, the same basic material. So there's a real sense in which we humans are, quote, stardust evolved to the point in which stardust can think about itself and its own story. Dowd continues by relaying a story that instead of seeking to live responsibly in light of our interdependence, we are inadvertently destroying our larger body, the Earth, because we lack evolutionary guidance. We're acting like cancer cells rather than immune cells. A cancer cell is a normal cell that loses its genetic memory. Cut off from the wisdom of millions of years of developmental guidance, it stops cooperating with the rest of the body. It experiences itself as separate from the body. It overpopulates, and it proceeds to consume the very organism that supports it. We call our society a consumer society, and to consume something is to eat it, right? We're consuming this planet because, like cancer cells, we've been trying to live without the evolutionary wisdom, the wisdom of interdependence and where we came from. The invitation is to assume an entirely new role in the body of life as an immune system, searching out problem areas and protecting our communities. Recalling our hymn from earlier, where did we come from? Where are we? What are we? Where are we going? The choice is up to us, and the stories we choose to tell matter. Are we going to tell flat earth stories? Or are we going to tell the stories of evolutionary religion that will help shape, that choice will help shape whether or not we will leave behind a world that is hospitable a few generations hence? The challenge of integrating scientific evolution with traditional religion was the great challenge of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Here in the early 21st century, our challenge is to face the reality of big history. 13.7 billion year old big. 400 billion galaxies big. We're called to face the reality of big history with what Dowd calls big integrity. Seeing our place in the universe with deep time eyes. Embracing the world with a global heart. Experiencing the expanse of the universe in the spirit of awe, worthy of a vast cosmos. And I'm grateful to be with you on this ongoing journey of evolutionary religion.